Bob Slobbed Robs
Cobb.
Bob Slobbed on Robs Cobb.
You are listening to We Are the Stigma, a show about an addict husband and alcoholic wife challenging stigmas one at a time. We'll be chatting with like-minded individuals using honesty, open-mindedness, and humor. Thanks for listening. Our episodes deal with potentially triggering topics. We are not doctors, and the opinions expressed are our own. If at any time you feel the need for support, please contact your local crisis center. For more information, visit wearethestigma.com/resources.
Hey guys, you're listening to We Are the Stigma. My name is Melissa, and as always, I'm joined by my husband and co-host, Cody Crikes.
Bringing the energy.
I did it.
I'm feeling it.
Thank you.
You did it.
So, next week, it might be you doing the opening.
Well.
Alone.
On Monday,
yeah.
when this launches,
yeah.
it could be a very depressing day.
It could be a depressing day.
I feel weird talking about this.
If is something, so I'm going skydiving tomorrow. Everybody.
Tomorrow. So we're recording this Saturday before the launch.
Yes. So I'm skydiving the next day, Sunday.
Easter.
I'm going skydiving on Easter. And I want you to promise me something.
What?
If I am to fall and hurt myself and die.
Yes. Hurt yourself.
Will you continue on with the podcast?
It's a lot of pressure.
It's good pressure. Good pressure.
I don't know.
Okay.
We'll have to think about it.
Fans.
Start crying. Well, just release the episodes we have.
Yeah. No openings.
Yeah, exactly.
Just me crying.
Just sobbing.
Here's our last episode. No, for reals though, and I am sorry if you have lost a loved one to skydiving, but the hopes are in my favor.
They are.
That it's going to be good.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. You've skydived before.
I did, and I will never do it again.
No.
Well, never say never.
Yeah.
Never say never, but I'll never do it again.
You most likely will not do it again.
Yeah, well, most likely, because I did not, and I think it's similar for you, I did not know what I was getting myself into.
For sure.
I had no clue. Like, I did it. I mean, so you hear skydiving. I was in my sober living, the manager of the sober living at the time, so I did mine like 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm, which God, is that's crazy.
I know. Just say that out loud.
I know.
Because I did like 3 months into my recovery, and I just didn't know what I was getting myself into. I was like, I'll just go sky, and it just never hit me.
Yeah.
And then I was I was getting trained, show what to do. It didn't hit me. Going up in the plane, getting a little bit nervous, but it hadn't really hit me. And then they opened up the fucking door and I literally almost shit myself. I was like, cause you just, it's like, you're close enough to when they open the door, you can see down.
Uh-huh.
Like, and I was like, what the fuck?
Who talked me into this?
Yeah. How did I okay this?
Yeah.
Like, I've got my whole life to live. Yeah. I just got happy for the first time forever.
Well, it's funny. Cause I think I met you right after that.
Yeah.
Like right after that. Within a week or two.
Yeah, it was pretty soon.
And, but yeah, you said the same thing. It's that door. That door opens and you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, because it's like, and it's very important to me. Like, I'm actually, you know, I am very proud of myself because I am so scared of heights.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't understand how it didn't register for me.
Had you wanted to go skydiving
before? I didn't want to go skydiving.
So it had never been on your register?
Shane, our sober living manager, asks all the people that are there, because he goes skydiving all the time. You want to go with me? You want to go with me? And he kept bothering me and kept bothering me and kept
bothering me.
And I, you know, I wasn't working. I was focusing on my recovery full time. And I was just like, finally, I was just like, okay, I'll do it. And like, next thing I know, whatever. I paid for it and I'm going. And it just all happened so fast.
I know. Well, I've been trying to talk my coworker. I'm going with my coworker, Pete. He's like my best friend coworker.
Pete?
And I'm going with him for his birthday. His birthday is on Monday, the day after. So he thinks it's funny if his gravestone says the day he was born and then he dies the day before his birthday. But anyway.
Twisted man.
And so I've wanted to go skydiving. Like, I'm down for
it. Yeah, you've been talking about
went. Yeah, like, I'm cool.
I'm cool.
But
I'm
also, like, I have kids. Yeah. So, you know, now that I have kids, I'm like, eh. But
When you were talking about that you were going to do it, I didn't really think it was going to happen. And then you're all, I did something.
Yeah. I just dropped some money.
Yep.
And, you know, and I didn't think he would really go because he doesn't really like going places or being with people.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know, he's probably never going to do it.
Yeah.
And then he's like, so we're going to do this? I'm like, well, yeah, like, you know, I couldn't back out now. And then next thing I know, we bought our tickets and it was just a month ago.
Yeah.
So we haven't even had this huge buildup.
Yeah.
It just, boom.
It's happening.
So it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow's
and,
the day.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm not.
Can I bring my phone up there with me?
No, I don't. Well, I don't know. I'm sure you can. But
like, how can I take pictures in the plane? How can I live stream it?
Well, maybe you can live stream it. They record you when you're up there. Okay. If you pay for the package.
We did.
Yeah. So the whole time you're going up, you get video of that too. Going on the plane.
Well, anyway, so I know that it's going to be great.
That's going to be amazing. You're going to have a great time.
I'm just going to be
You're going to become a professional skydiver.
Jesus.
Hallelujah.
You have risen. It's
Easter. That's right.
Well, anyway, so that's what's going on in our lives. Yes. Other than that, the same. This is our second episode.
Yes. And our first episode, I just want to say thank you to everyone. Our first episode of season three was our largest launch, most downloaded day.
It was awesome.
It was amazing.
I mean, it was awesome. And so, we try not to look at numbers.
Yeah, numbers aren't that important, but of course, we check into it. Yeah. It's nice to, you know, we've been gone for a while, and, you know, you start thinking, are people still going to listen and all that stuff? And so it was just we're so grateful. We're like, beyond, the episode was so good. And so we're so glad people listened. And, you know, we had a lot of listens to our past episodes, which is always so rewarding too, because we have so many great, I mean, all of our episodes are great. Yeah. So when people start going back in the catalog and start listening, that's always such a great feeling.
It is a great feeling. And like you mentioned, it was such a powerful, important message in last week's episode. So if you have not listened to it, we highly recommend that you go back and do, because it's after this one. Go put it on, because it's just so fucking good.
So good. Let's talk about this one. So we're talking with Carrie Polero, who is so rad.
She's so fucking rad.
She's so rad. So we had, if you listen in season two, we had an amazing guest called named Beck Antonucci. She was on our show, just amazing about, you know, radical self-ownership and herpes. Thank you. And, you know, just coming into your own and doing all these types of things. And Beck actually mentions Carrie in the episode.
When we were interviewing Beck, I remember the moment she talks about Carrie, because in my mind, I'm like, oh, we got to get her on the show.
Yeah, exactly. And then Carrie reached out, and we reached out, and we talked and conversated. We're like, let's line this up. And we knew we wanted to have her on. And so it was such a good episode. So in the episode, we cover, you know, she was diagnosed with herpes too. Is that the right word? Diagnosed?
Tested positive
for herpes. And she also, you know, goes into detail of one of her shames in her life was using abortion as a birth control method. And she gets into detail of how that came to be. You know, she had an abortion when she was very young, and it kind of came into her mind that's normal. Right? That's how it's done.
And she doesn't have to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, we just do it and brush under the rug and move on.
Yeah, exactly.
That was something that she didn't realize until, which was so interesting. She didn't realize until way later on that it was something that she was holding on to, that it was something that really was playing into her life that she hadn't overcome and hadn't owned.
Well, it's because so many times we have these things happen in our lives, and we think the thing to do is just brush them aside and not deal with them, because we don't think we need to. I just won't think about that. Yeah. I'm just not going to worry about it.
But because why the fuck would we want to?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And so we realize there are these things that bleed into our lives that we're just like, well, where is this coming from? And it's such a good conversation. And it was our first interview going back into season three. It was the first one we recorded, and I love it so much because we have that connection of recovery, right? Because she is also clean and sober
6 years,
and so to connect on that home base, on that foundation where we have started and what we know and love so much,
right?
And so just to be talking to another addict, to another alcoholic, it just really like sets that tone of just like, you just let it all down and you just
we're in this, let's talk, let's chat, because we've all been there. And so, I mean, she's funny. She's smart. She's come through so much. Her story is incredible. You're going to love this episode. Not only is it just so inspiring, all of the growth and everything she's moved past, and, you know, moved past shame and everything, but it was just such a good conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just really enjoyable. Both of us, as with mostly all of them, but, you know, we of course want to mention this one. We were just so stoked on the interview.
We're so stoked.
We're like, oh, we're back in season three.
We got this. She set such a great tone moving forward, right? Because, like we've mentioned, like sometimes we do get nervous, and sometimes, you know,
I always get nervous.
Yeah, but she's just set such a great tone to move forward. Yeah. And what was so cool is that she showed up on camera, and we don't this far, we don't do video.
Yeah.
We're only audio. And so we got to watch her the whole time. Like, I loved that she was just like, okay, well, you're going to watch me. Like,
yeah, here I am.
You know, like, yeah. She could have ended out and called back with audio.
Yeah.
But she was just like, cool. Yeah. And like, she mentions that she lives in Florida and it's humid, but she had done her hair and she just, I was like, this girl. And it was like watching a TV show. Like, there are a couple of times, like I mentioned it in the episode, where like, I didn't respond because I was just watching.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, you're watching TV. You don't normally talk to Oprah.
Yeah, so exactly. You're just watching.
You just watch. So, but
it's like, are you going to say anything?
Yeah. Or? So it was
the show is on.
It was so refreshing to see this woman just like own everything. Like, I don't know if I would be able to just like sit there and know people are watching me and not be able to look back at them.
Right.
But she did it.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah. She was great.
We love her so much. So thank you, Carrie, for coming on.
Huge fans of yours.
Spilling your guts. And yeah, we are
huge sharing fans. Your guts with us.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I just was remembering that I was going to jump out of a plane. We love you guys so very much. Give this, yes.
And so ahead. Let me bump the bio for Carrie here. So Carrie is a personal freedom and emotional well-being coach, an NLP practitioner, speaker, and founder of the program Action. Action focuses on supporting women in breaking through shame and a lack of self-worth by helping them break free from the self-defeating stories that prevent them from living the life that they desire. They are empowered to pursue their goals and dreams. It also allows women to activate their voices through living a beautiful and expressed life. Action supports women in healing from past trauma and encourages them to embrace every part of their true self. Boom.
Right up my alley.
Yeah.
So check her out. We'll have her linked in the show notes. And she also plugs herself at the end.
Yeah.
And we love you guys so much. And we ask that if you have time, if you enjoy this episode, if you know anybody that could benefit from this episode, give it a share. Just get a little share.
Share it. We're trying to spread the message.
That's all we want to do. And then if you guys have an opportunity, if you can jump over to iTunes, if you haven't already, and leave us that 5-star review, it helps us break that algorithm and get our message out, which in the end is the only thing we want.
That's it.
And we are doing this little promotion this year that if any of our guests come on and they are authors, they've written a book, if you guys go and leave us a review and screenshot it and DM it to us or email it to us, we will buy you the book of that episode. So the last episode we just did was episode 1. Mm-hmm. And Elaine has a book.
Yes.
And it's a
Calling My
Spirit Back. So we will get you that book. We will send it to you. And then you have to go leave her an Amazon review because
she's amazing too.
She's killing it.
That's
what's going to get her into Hay House.
That's right.
So anyway, we love you guys so much. We hope you have a great week.
And hopefully Melissa will be here next Monday.
I will be here next Monday.
She will be.
All right, guys. Love you.
Bye.
Bye. So, hi, Carrie.
Thanks for taking over.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Carrie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
Thank you for being
here. Yeah, we're so grateful that you're here. So, we were just talking about, you reside in sunny Florida.
Yes. Beautiful.
Avoid the humidity.
Yeah. Stay inside or wear a hat.
Inside where it's safe.
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember, I totally remember when Beck talked about you during her interview. And I remember thinking, man, that would be an incredible interview to have on our end. And so when you did reach out to us, or when we reached out to you, however it worked out, we were just like so fucking pumped. And we're so excited for the story you're about to share and what we're going to get into. But before we start, we like to ask a little couple icebreaker questions.
You're going to be on the hot seat.
So I hope you are prepared.
I'm ready.
My first question is, what is your favorite color?
Purple.
And why?
I was going to say wrong.
Oh my gosh. You know, I've never really thought about why purple is my favorite color. It's just always, just because it is.
Yeah. It is.
Don't question it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I love it. What is your favorite, if you could recommend like a bingeable show? Is there something you're watching right now, or is there your go-to show?
Nothing that I'm currently watching, but oh my God, I watched Game of Thrones and when I was sick, and I thought, I'm just going to watch a couple episodes. And like 2 weeks later, it was bad. Like my back.
You hadn't showered.
It was pretty much just like that.
Yeah.
Playing on the couch.
You're not the first person I've heard of who is literally
just sucked in.
Binged the hell out of Game of Thrones.
Oh, it was incredible. I couldn't stop. It was an obsession. Oh my God. I felt like it was a drug.
Y'all, did I just relapse?
I know.
And my last and final question for you is, would you rather have $1 million or 1 million friends?
$1 million? Are you kidding me? Is that really a question?
Great answer.
You could buy 1 million.
That's true. That's true. Dollars. You don't even need to buy them. No. You just flaunt your money around.
Yeah. The money would be your friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Benjamins, I think they're called. Well, good. Thank you for playing our game and breaking the ice with us.
It's a very easy game.
And now we're going to get into the tough stuff.
So let's just kind of get into it. So there's three topics that we kind of talked about before. You came on the show just via email, but one thing that I want to start off with is something that you have in common with us is both of us are in recovery, struggled with addiction, Melissa more alcohol, and then me drugs and alcohol. And we know that recovery and addiction and alcohol is a part of your story. So why don't you just fill us in? How much time do you have? What did substance abuse look like for you?
Well, I just celebrated 6 years and, but I was, 20 years in active addiction. I think I started using when I was 14 and it just escalated kind of from there. And I know we'll get into it a little bit later, but it really stemmed from, I remember, you know, like my parents really weren't there and my dad had left and I didn't realize this, but I wanted that like male attention. Mm-hmm. And so like my first boyfriend, I got pregnant at 14. And had an abortion. And then from there, not knowing how to process that information, I was uncomfortable inside, but I didn't know why. And so I didn't want to feel that anymore. I wanted to feel different. So I started using drugs. I remember smoking, I think I was 14 years old. Mm-hmm. At school. I remember that.
So, I mean, I think about that too, because I've been, you know, so much of what we do is, you know, we take on when we're younger, right? And at the same point, we have no idea how to process it. I mean, I can only imagine at 14, I mean, God, what the hell was I doing at 14 to have, you know, something so intense? I don't even know if you're really even, like you said, capable of processing what's happening. So what you do is resort to something else because you don't know what the hell you're supposed to do with how you're feeling.
Right. And in my household, we were taught like, you don't express your feelings. That's weak. We don't do that around here. Mm. So, you know, it was kind of like, well, what do I do with all this stuff? It's just there. And so I didn't really know that I had permission to feel those feelings.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. And so what, so take us on. So you had the, you had your abortion at 14 and substance abuse probably kicked up even more than what did the next couple of years? Like, what is your substance abuse start to turn into? How is it impacting your life?
Well, I use drugs. Like I think all during high school. And you know, what was really interesting was I still had scholarships to college for sports. I would play sports. I would get high and go to practice and I could still function. And so I didn't think that was an issue at all. And so I had a volleyball scholarship. I went on to college, but I still, my using continued to progress where I didn't want to go to practice. I didn't really think it was important. As long as I show up at the game, we're good.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really want to go to class anymore. I became very fearful. Like I didn't want to go to class because I was scared to be around other people. It was pretty crazy.
So you were getting a bunch of anxiety? Is that what you just, the fear, you just wanted to be alone, you know, get secluded and just.
Are you paranoid?
Oh yeah. Super paranoid.
Were you just super using, paranoid. Were you just using pot at this point?
No. It had really progressed to cocaine, alcohol, anything. As soon as I found speed, it was like game on. And it was like courage. I could talk to anybody because I had become so afraid of people. And as soon as you introduced me to cocaine, it was on. Now I have friends. I can talk to people. I'm not afraid of them.
And you were the whole volleyball team. You could just play all by yourself.
Absolutely.
run around. You got it all.
You're like, this girl's on to something.
Yeah, mine was, it's similar in kind of a way, except I just was so shy and so nervous in general. Like I felt very uncomfortable in my own skin. And I remember when I first got drunk, it was like the first time where I was like, oh my God, like I can embrace myself. And then when I took opioids, it was like the first time where I was like, oh, nobody can smell, but I can be my, you know, I just, all these things where I was thinking I was finding the answer. I can be comfortable. I can be myself as I thought I was going to be. And then of course it starts off, like you said, where you're still going to your practice. You're still going, but it's just that gradual thing where all of a sudden starts taking over your life and more and more and more.
Oh, absolutely. And then then I start to try to really hide it. Because people are coming to me now saying, hey, you know, you might have a problem. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. So now I start to hide it. Everything's real secretive now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So what led you to, so how old are you right now?
I'm 43.
Oh, wow. You look incredible.
You look great.
What's 43?
And just so everyone can know, we can see her, but she can't see us. So she has no idea if it's actually Cody and Melissa behind the mic, but we know it's Carrie.
So what's 43 minus six? How old were you when you got
clean? 37.
37. So you were 37 when you got clean.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what?
37, 38, right around there.
What led you there?
So, I was working at a strip club and, it progressed real quickly. I was working at a strip club and, I started dating a coworker. And I lived with, because, you know, we're addicts. We move in right away. At least I did. Like, I know you for 2 days. Oh, my God. We have to get married.
Where do you live?
Yeah. Right.
So I moved in with him like after 2 weeks. And after about a month, maybe two, he was like, listen, you got to get the fuck out of here. I'm sorry. I don't know if we can curse here.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, you can.
Okay. Yeah. He was like, you got to fucking go. I don't care where you go, but it can't be here because you can't be around my son. And, so being the good manipulative addict I am, I was like, oh, well, maybe I have a problem, you know, because I just wanted to buy some time. I really didn't have anywhere to go. And so he took me to a meeting, my very first meeting. And I'm thinking, oh my God, we're going to go in here and he's going to see all these people that are, you know, just so effed up and I'm not going to belong here. And because are you kidding me? When I think of drug addict, I think of, people eating out of dumpsters and that are homeless or shooting up, you know, I don't think of your average person. And we got into this meeting and as we're leaving, he goes, oh my God, you've got to go back tomorrow. Those are your people. And I was like, fuck, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah.
And so, stuck. Yeah. So what did that look like though? When did it take?
So, I went, you know, they tell you to come every day and they give you all these little rules, right? And I'm not about rules. Yeah. And you can't drink alcohol. I'm here for drugs, man. This is bullshit. So, I went and, I went for 3 months. I went one day a week because they said you should come every day, but I'm not about that. So I'm going to go one day a week. I'm still going to drink alcohol. I'm not getting a sponsor. I'm not getting any help. And, I'm not calling anybody. And, I remember going to a meeting one day. I was sitting there and some guy stood up and he was like, you know what? You people think, some of y'all think y'all can come in here and get recovery by osmosis. Mm-hmm. And at that time I was sitting, for whatever reason, I was just listening. And I hear this stuff all the time, but he was like, you know, we tell you exactly what the hell to do. Come in. You got to come every day. You got to get help. You got to get a sponsor. You got to get a network. You got to do some step work. You have to do all these things. And I went, oh my God, I'm not fucking doing any of this. Holy shit. Well, and at this point I'm in so much pain now. And I'm drinking alcohol. And so then, and I'm like, fuck, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot because what do I have to lose now? I've tried doing it my way because I thought I could take little bits and pieces of the program and create my own program. But it didn't work out that way. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to give it a fair shot. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I gave it an honest effort.
I love that.
And so, I mean, I love those aha moments. Those are like my favorite things where it's like, why in that moment were you ready to receive what he said? You know, those moments are always so cool when it finally just clicks. So did you find recovery in the recovery you're in now without going to like an inpatient or a rehab? Was yours strictly through the fellowship that you went through?
Yes. I just went through the fellowship.
Wow.
And, and you know, and part of that, because I did that, it allowed me to try to separate myself from everybody saying, well, I'm not like them. I don't need to do things their way because I came in here by myself. I wasn't court ordered and I kept trying to not look for, I was looking for the differences instead of looking for the ways that were alike.
Of course.
And so that kept me a little bit sicker a little bit longer.
Mm, yeah.
I think that's a pretty regular occurrence.
I love that, because I tell people, you know, we always say like, because we never know when someone is going to hear what they need to hear. Right. So like, maybe a person will go to a meeting and they'll get that seed planted. And although that seed isn't ready to bloom yet, although they're not ready to really get that message, that little seed is there. And you just never know when someone is going to get it. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's just so true that you just never give up hope, I feel, especially for people that have, you know, loved ones that are struggling with addiction. Like, I hear it from moms all the time. Like, I'm ready to give up. I'm ready to give up. Well, you don't have to give up yet, because you just don't know when someone's going to hear it. And here you are, you're there because you were really just trying to stay at your boyfriend's house. And 3 months in, you hear what you're ready to, you hear it.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, it clicked for you. So that's really, really rad. So did you end up living with him, staying with him?
Yeah. You know, we stayed together for about 6 years.
Oh, wow.
There came a point where it was like, I needed to, and I'm sure you guys are going to understand this part. Like, I needed to live on my own.
Yeah.
And be responsible for paying my own bills,
right.
And, you know, develop in that manner so that I could contribute to a relationship later on. Mm-hmm. I needed to still do some internal work on me.
Yeah.
And so we were together, but I moved out and got my own place just because I needed to. I'd never done that before. I'd never been responsible. Are you kidding me?
No. I mean,
that was a huge thing for you.
It was a huge thing for me. Like, I had to learn how to be an adult and like how to do things. Like I always say, like, go to the post office, like go, you know, like that was such a foreign concept to me, was doing anything that an adult would do. Especially, I wasn't driving when I first got sober. There was just all this life that I hadn't lived. And so, 3, 4, 5 years into my recovery, I'm doing things that normal fucking people do. And I'm still mind blown by the fact that I'm living a life like a normal person.
Yeah. That's where like the gratitude comes in, right? Exactly. 'Cause you know, it wasn't your life. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's beautiful.
So Carrie, before we get into like, 'cause I know I want to hear so much about like where you're at now. And I love your Instagram page. So many amazing quotes, just all the amazing stuff that you're doing now, but let's just go back a little bit, because there's a couple topics that we wanted to discuss. And one of them was just the first one you mentioned was talking about how you had an abortion when you were 14 years old. And that was something that obviously was very difficult for you. And is that something that continued to play a part in your life?
Oh my God. Yeah. But I didn't know that that was playing a part in my life, because when that happened, it was such a big secret. Like, I remember my mom saying, we're not going to tell anybody. And I know that her intentions were good. But I was like, thank God, I don't want to tell anybody either. You know, I don't want people to judge me, because I'm 14. I'm so worried about what everybody else thinks about me. And so that taught me about keeping secrets and keeping things internalized. And then it also taught me that, abortion is birth control. And so that was what I used for birth control, like throughout my whole life. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds kind of like extreme and crazy, but it's the truth, because that's like, for me, I processed it like, oh, this is okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes sense, right? I mean, it's like, this is how it was done. And so, and you're young. I mean, I totally get it. And I wonder, like, how, like we were talking about, how much was it an impact for you when it was happening? I know it felt like that's what you should be doing, in a sense, like that's your birth control. Was it something that later, where you started really realizing that this was impacting you more, that it was something that you were using as birth control? Or what did the process or the way you dealt with it look like?
You know, I really didn't deal with it. And, because I kept saying to myself, it's not affecting me. And when I'm supposed to, whenever I'm supposed to deal with it, it'll come up. And so it never came up, because the reality was, I never wanted to talk about it, because it's kind of like a blemish and people might judge me, but really I might judge me.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? And so I put it up on a shelf, and actually I didn't really address it. I really didn't even address it in my recovery work. I just honestly started addressing it a couple years ago.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, so it's something that you're holding in. So what does that look like for you? Have you gotten, you know, coaching? Has it been spirituality that's kind of walked you through? Has it been therapy? What is that? How does that look like?
Well, I work with a therapist, and also I got some coaching, and that is actually how I met Beck, which is just so crazy. Mm-hmm. It's so crazy how I met Beck. A friend of mine sent me her Instagram page and said, "Hey, you need to follow this girl." And I remember getting on her Instagram page, and it was this post about herpes and what you see. It was a picture of her, and it said what the world sees, and beautiful, fit, and it had all these awesome adjectives, and then the reality, and it said self-loathing, tested positive for herpes. And I went, oh my God, because I tested positive for herpes, and I was holding that a secret as well. And so I started following her, and, then after following her for a little bit, it was triggering me. Right. Mm-hmm. And so the triggers were getting bad to the point where I just don't want to follow her anymore, but I know that's not what it is. When the triggers are getting bad, because now it's time for me to address the problem, right, again, which is a reflection of me. Right. And so I just reached out to her and was like, "Hey, can you tell me how you can talk about this shit like that? Like, what are you doing?"
Yeah.
And that's how I started working with her.
That gave me goosebumps, yeah, because it's like, when you were telling it, it's just like your friend recommending the first post you see. And I mean, it was like, bam, like this person is speaking to you. Like this was the timing of somebody who's good, and you were obviously triggered at first, but somebody who's going to be helping you, because they are, it's like hers is radical self-love, right? Radical self-ownership is what she talks about. And so that's just such and we love Beck, by the way.
Yeah.
That was such a rad interview.
She's what's so cool. And I remember, as you're telling this story right now, I remember her telling her story of when she first spoke out about testing positive, and she came out with it, and because she hid it for a few years, I think. And then, I mean, I remember her talking about the fear, her talking about how she was just standing at the edge of a cliff, and she just felt, like, everybody was going to judge her, and that people were going to, I remember her saying people were going to like write on her garage, like, "Beck is a whore" or something, mm-hmm, like that, And so she faced that fear. And ultimately that is what you did, where you wanted to unfollow, you wanted to just pretend like you weren't being triggered, or pretend whatever it may be, but instead you reached out to her. And that right there, all you were doing is like facing this humongous fear in hopes that you were going to heal, or I don't even know if the word,
yeah, you might not have even known yourself. Yeah, you just felt like you had to be like, "How the fuck are you doing this?"
and I applaud you for that.
Me too.
That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely. Yeah. Because I didn't know I was supposed to heal. I really didn't even know that that was an issue that was holding me back.
Yeah.
That's what's so powerful about that entire experience and how I came to work with her.
That is, I mean, because it's so fascinating, because you don't know what you don't know. Right. And so you were never taught that this trauma, this healing needed to occur, or else you're going to be living this life. And then it smacks you in your face.
And,
and there's so many people who go through their lives not understanding where the answer is. And once you find out, it seems so obvious, but it's not. It's right in front of you, but you do not see it. And then when you see it, it's like smacks you right in the face.
And so often people just run from that. So often people get smacked in the face and just run the other way. And that wasn't the case for you. So that's just, that's just such a self-blooming moment. I love it. So you started working with Beck. And then what was it that brought to you to being open about it and talking to other women about it? Kind of owning your story.
I had been living with it for so many years. I think it was like, oh my God, I don't know, maybe 15 years. It had been a long time. And so it was kind of like coming to the surface of now this woman is speaking about it openly there. It was almost like she gave me permission to own my stuff. And so just by working with her for a little bit, I remember messaging her one night, and I'm like, "Hey, I think I'm just going to go on Facebook Live and talk about it." And she was like, "What? Okay. You do what you want to do. I'll be there to support you." And
you did?
I absolutely did. And
good,
it was, it was awesome. It was probably one of the most freeing experiences I've ever had.
That gives me goosebumps too. Those are such huge moments.
And how was it received?
Oh my God, it was so well received. I had women messaging me, thanking me, because they were afraid to speak out about it. Mm-hmm. And I understood that. Like, I get not wanting to speak out about it. And it's like come to the other side. It's so beautiful over here. But I also understand that the pain and being held back from that, because everybody has their own process.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, that's what's so powerful about, you know, every person has their own traumas or issues, and whether they choose to speak about it is their own, right? They don't have to be the one who's talking about it. But what's so powerful are the people who, not that that way isn't powerful, but what's additionally is so powerful are the people who do speak up, because that's when you feel, that's when you, and that's why it's so important when people do speak up, because that's when you hear the voice that you need to hear to understand that you're not alone. That you understand that the shame you felt and the shame you feel is felt by this person and most likely tons of other people. Mm-hmm. And so what you do is when you embrace that and it comes out, it's like you said, people reach out to you and they're like, you know, who knows, that someone might be like, dude, I've had herpes for the last 10 years. I haven't told a single person, or, you know, I've had multiple abortions as well. I've had so much shame about that. Thank you for so much. I mean, those things are huge for people to not feel alone anymore. It's very powerful.
There's this quote we always say, I think, I don't know if it's a recovery quote, but like, we'll love you until you can love yourself. And that's kind of like what it reminds me of, you know, like you're able to give a voice and speak out loud and speak your truth until somebody either can or wants to, but they can still find healing through it, you know? And I just,
I remember when, so a suicide attempt is part of my story right before I got in recovery, and I had a lot of shame about it. And I remember, and I didn't hold on to the shame for very long because it happened right before I got into recovery. I went into an inpatient and everything. And I was in a big group of people. And just beforehand, the counselor has been like, listen, you need to just tell the truth while you're here. Just don't lie. Nobody cares anymore. Just tell your truth, you know? And I remember going in there just shaking, and I was crying, and I was just decided I was going to say it. And I thought the world was going to end afterwards. And like, honestly, after I said it, I even like kind of looked around to see like what people's reactions were, because I expected some people to like recoil and feel very uncomfortable, but it was like, people were like tearing up, and, you know, and just, I felt so connected to the room. And so many people came up to me afterwards, be like, hey, I tried to harm myself too. Hey, me too. Like, you're not alone. And I remember just being like, fuck, like, this is like so rad. Like, I do not feel alone in this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, I think shame is heavy as hell, and people don't realize how heavy it is. I had no idea I was carrying all of this shame surrounding herpes and surrounding abortion. I just knew that those were topics I didn't want to talk about. I had no idea that they were really affecting the way they were affecting me in so many areas of my life, especially in my relationships, because I never felt good enough to really be my true authentic self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now that when you spoke out about that and you've really kind of like stepped into your power, as they say, what does it look like for you now? Like, so is it something where, like, is your mission kind of, or part of your mission to kind of spread this message more via like Instagram and helping other people? Or what now that you've really kind of grown into who you are, what does that look like?
It's funny because, when I started working with Beck, I was coaching, but I wanted to do like this fitness coaching because that's all I had ever done my whole life. I was athletic and I did a lot of fitness competitions. And so that was how I wanted to help people. And then after having my experience with her, I was like, oh my God, no, this is how you help people. Yeah. This is what makes people feel good, because everyone deserves to have a beautiful life and feel amazing. And it's not about what you look like. I was so focused on like the fitness aspect. And so I realized that that was not what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like an emotional well-being coach and help people get through shame. You know, that's where I think when you finally let go of shame, you find a freedom that you've never experienced before.
Absolutely.
That's very powerful.
And it's hard to get there alone. And it's not something, I mean, you want to look good, you can type in, you know, workout videos, and you can type in how to get a good booty. And there's so many people out there to coach on the looks and to coach on the makeup and the hair and the this and the that. But finding somebody who's passionate about getting deeper, you know, I think it's becoming more and more common where people are really starting to embrace some of the quote unquote ugly sides.
Yeah.
Like their stigmas.
Or like the shadow side.
Yeah, the shadow sides and stuff. But it's still, you know, and like you knew that you wanted to help people.
So you were on the right path.
Right.
But you just haven't found, you just hadn't found that spark yet. And you found that spark, and that ended up in a beautiful little package.
Oh, absolutely. And it's so funny because I thought that fixing the outside at that time was the solution for me, because I didn't want to deal with the inside. So if the outside looks pretty, then I'm good. Yeah. I look okay. I'm good. Nobody will know.
So you mentioned a couple different times about how, you know, like you didn't live with your boyfriend anymore because you needed to kind of go on your own, and you needed right there. You were saying that it was really affecting your relationships. So do you feel now that you are in a better place to be a better partner, or are you still on your kind of like self journey alone, or like, what does that look like for you? Cause I feel like that's such a huge topic that we don't really ever talk about, is being a whole person so that we can better be in a partnership.
Yeah. You know, I kept looking at him like, you don't do these things for me. You need to make me feel this way. You need to, you know, you need to compliment me. You need to do this. And he would tell me, I can't make you feel those things. And I didn't understand what the hell he was talking about.
Yeah. Yes, you are. That is your job.
How did you not know this? And you know, now I feel like I'm in such a better place as far as, you know, it's about me making sure that I'm enough, that I feel enough, because nothing outside of me is going to fill me up. It's all about filling up that void inside of me with my higher power, right?
Yeah.
Higher self, or God, or Buddha, whatever you want to call it. But it's really about getting in touch with myself spiritually.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, that's the biggest lie, right? Is just this peddling of societal beliefs that you can be happy from external things. And once you have that kind of epiphany where you realize that, like, seriously, happiness is an inside job, like that's where happiness comes from, you realize how ridiculous it is, like, and how you were just searching for something that was never going to be found. And you just getting that high and then that low and that high and that low. And then life, you think you get this promotion, you're going to be happy. And then, you know, you keep going down those waves. And, you know, it's just so, like, I don't want to say, well, I guess sad is the right word, because it's just so many people are swept up in that. And it is such a recipe for a life that is unfulfilled and unmoving and, you know, lacking depth, because you never really get to explore what's going. And then another thing is just people are scared. Like, they're scared of facing, and I do not blame them. A lot of people have some shadow work or some dark sides to them, or things that have happened to them that they can't even imagine bringing up. And that is legitimate, but it also is preventing them from, you know, ultimately being happy.
Yeah. And like you said, you're looking for the answer when all along, and it's just so cliche, but all along the answer was inside of you.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And learning to love yourself, as somebody who has struggled for all of my life with self-love and self-loathing and all of this stuff, like learning that it doesn't have to come from your partner or come from outside things, makes you in turn a better woman, right? Like, in the sense that I didn't need Cody. I didn't put pressure on Cody anymore to make me feel like I was beautiful, to make me feel like I was worthy, because I had that in myself. And that's going to ripple to my children, because I don't need them to validate me. I don't need my friends to validate me. And so you become a better person, like, you become more whole for yourself, and you become more whole for those around you. And it takes the pressure off of, like you said, you would tell your boyfriend, like, you need to do this, you need to do that. Like, I have to feel beautiful because you tell me I'm beautiful. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'll go to Cody when my hair is messy. I'm like, tell me I'm pretty and feed me food, you know,
chew my food.
But at the same sense, I know that I don't put that pressure on him, and I don't put that pressure on the other people in my life that I love so much. And it's just, when you have it inside, it's just so healing for everybody around you. It's like a ripple effect.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, absolutely. It's like, my healing is my responsibility, and I can sit and, you know, I mean, we've all had bad childhoods, and I would sit and whine about mine, you know, and finally somebody was like, well, you know, your healing is your responsibility. Why don't you get off your ass and go do something about it? Sitting around complaining isn't going to get you anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't think of that at first.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was like, that's everyone else's fault. That. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was the one who was screwed.
Yeah.
Why am I the one who has to do
it? Somebody is going to fix me now.
Yeah, exactly.
I was such a victim. Oh my God.
Yeah, well, it's such an I don't want to say easy place to be, but it's such the kind of easiest path to take because, you know, you are wronged, or at least, you know, you feel like you were wronged and it doesn't feel fair and it feels unjust. So, you know, you get lost. And then what you have to realize is like, well, it's never going to get fixed unless I do it.
Yeah.
Like I can sit there and try to push it out and feel like everything was wrong to me, but then you'll just be stuck in that the whole time. Like you said, the victim, you never get out of it.
And at first that seems like the only answer.
Yeah.
You know, but until you start seeking, like we all have just talked about, until you start seeking, okay, well, this isn't going away. And no matter how many times my mom has said sorry, it's still not going away. And no matter how many times the men who have hurt me are out of my life and the time heals all wounds bullshit, it still is not going away. So what can I do now?
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like it gets to be almost like it should be the first resort, but it becomes the last resort.
Yeah. Because you've tried everything else because everything else made sense and you're still stuck. So let's move on, you know?
It's about shifting that thinking. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm just going to continue to punish everyone around me, not just my partners, but everybody around me. I'm
absolutely
just everything out on them.
Absolutely. So what is your... what is your recovery, your STI shame and your abortion shame? Like, what does that all look like today? Do you still go to meetings? Do you, you mentioned you work with a therapist.
Yeah, I'm still active in recovery. Absolutely. I'm a firm believer that I always need to be. I go to a therapist. I know a lot of people believe that, you know, recovery is, you know, the fellowship is the only answer. But for me, I just needed additional help. I needed additional tools. And because I was sick as fuck. I go to therapy. I have a coach. What else have I done? I had equine therapy. I do hypnosis. I do so many different things because I just feel each additional tool that I have is just more ammo in my
back. Yeah. No, that's so true. I mean, it's like and it's not like a one size fits all too. Like it's what works for you. I mean, Melissa and I can attest we're in recovery in one of the fellowship programs, but we have, you know, we seek therapy, medication has been used. I mean, you know what I mean? So there's lots of different avenues. It's not just like one, you know, if you can come from multiple angles.
Yeah. And I feel like over time, my recovery has changed, right? Like it doesn't look, it's not what I needed. Like what I'm doing now wouldn't have worked 7 years ago,
right. You
know, because I have changed and I have grown. And so your program grows with you, whatever your program looks like, whether it's meetings, whether it's therapy, whether it's all of it together. So the guy who took you to your first meeting, how did he know to go there? Is he in recovery or was he just I've heard about this place.
He was like, I've heard about this. And he got online and he's like, let's do this little test they have. Right. And I'm like, no, let's not, but, you know? Yeah. You know, I clearly passed. That's why we went.
Yeah. Flying colors. 100%.
That's funny. That's really funny. Let's take this test.
Yeah. You want to know what's interesting is this guy was giving you, I mean, I don't want to get into the relationship dynamic, but I mean, he gave you he got you to the fellowship. He also was telling you that, you know, he's not going to be able to, you got to, you know,
love everything yourself.
You got to love yourself. You love so you. Two good takeaways from that relationship, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He's amazing. And we're, you know, we're wonderful friends to this day.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. He's good. A huge part of my process.
Nice. So you want to ask her the final question? Yeah. And last, real quick, actually, Carrie, is there anything that we missed? Anything you wanted to kind of touch on that we may maybe glossed over?
Oh man. I can't think of anything. I think we covered a lot in a short amount of time.
We did. Really did. It was a great conversation. We were just going. Yeah, it really has.
I think
the main thing to stress is just, you know, it's important to become a whole person and not be so, become so attached to other things. Like I was so attached to a relationship, you know, and now that I know that being whole and I'm not supposed to be attached to this person, I'm supposed to walk alongside them and be support. You know, and compliment each other rather than you complete me.
Right.
You know
what
I mean?
Right.
Yeah. 100%. So we always ask our guests, if you could go back to a time when you were struggling or at your lowest moments and give yourself or someone else who might be dealing with those moments right now, a piece of advice, what would you say?
not be afraid to ask for help. And if you think that it's not a problem, it probably is. If you're keeping a secret, that is my go-to. If secrets keep me sick. And so if I'm keeping something a secret, it's probably affecting me somehow in my relationships. It's probably affecting me physically and affecting my health as well. And that's definitely something that I need to look at.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not a weakness to ask for help, because that's what we're all here for, is to help each other.
Absolutely.
You know, I saw a quote somewhere where it said, emotional strength is asking for help. And I thought that was just a brilliant way to put it, because which is the harder one, not to ask for help or to ask for help? It's to ask for help. So that's the one that's stronger.
Absolutely.
And Carrie, where can we find you? Where can all of our guests find you?
I'm on Instagram at Carrie Palero, or at carriepalero.com.
Nice.
Thank you. And we'll have her tagged in the show notes, so make sure you check her out. And just thank you so much for taking your time and for letting us watch you for the past almost hour. It's almost been distracting, because I'm just like watching her and I'm like, oh yeah, like into it. But yeah. I'm not, you know, I'm just
she
like,
can't see us.
I'm just like watching. Like, oh, this is good. What is she going to say next? And I'm like, oh fuck, this is a conversation.
Melissa thought she was watching a TV show.
Yeah,
for a couple
documentary.
Times. Oh wait, is she talking to me right now?
I'm like, turn the volume up. We've enjoyed this so much.
Yeah, Carrie, thank you. I mean, you know, we always get excited about interviews, but we always know it's a good one when it goes by really quick.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for your insights. Thank you so much for helping break stigmas. Thank you so much for talking about shame that people have and how they can break free from it. It's just such an amazing kind of path that you've taken on. So we're really grateful that you came on and shared on our show.
The work you're doing is very, very important.
It's so important.
So never doubt.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me and for providing this platform. I think this is such an amazing thing that you guys are doing. I'm so excited about it.
Oh, thank you, Carrie. Thanks again.
Bye, girl.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.